you to bear with me on this one, but close your eyes and imagine building a 10,000 square kilometer island out of recycled plastic. Now, this man-made structure will be around 7 or 8 times the size of Stewart Island, and it's going to be home to 500,000 people. They'll live, work, play and defecate on this plastic paradise. Now, there's good fish supplies locally, there's access to wave and solar power, which will generate lots of electricity, and there's even agriculture planned to feed the locals. It all sounds a bit mad, but a team of Dutch architects reckons it could be a great way to recycle all the plastic litter that's bobbing about in our oceans. A combination of ocean currents and wind patterns concentrates plastic waste into huge rotating whirlpools, and they're known as gyres, and these potentially could be the raw materials that the Dutch architect Ramon Knuster plans to recycle for his tropical island.
Well, the concept is that there is this huge amount of plastic waste floating around in the oceans, and you have circular currents who make larger concentrations of these plastics. And at the moment, this large concentration of plastic, it's found in a North Pacific gyre. And at this spot, we want to start with recycle the plastic, which is all floating around there, to start to recycle it on the spot. And with this way of recycling, we actually want to build an island over there and to create new land.
So the plastic is there, this gyre, and we've heard various reports on our program about this gyre, is essentially all of this plastic waste. It's getting more and more dense as the currents sort of push it in together. How big is how much actual material is out there?
Last year they made an estimate, and they said it was about 44 million kilos.
I mean, I have trouble getting my head around that. What does that mean in size? Is that the size of a cunt? Can I compare that to a land mass or something?
Yeah, you compare it to a land mass, but at the moment we have to see how we can recycle it and how much we can use to actually build something with it. And it's not like it's a very large concentration that you can that you can take it out of the water with a shovel or something. So it's just a huge area, like the size of the United States. And in there's this kind of huge plastic soup floating around. And you have different concentrations of the plastic, but it's not that concentrated that it's very easy to get out of the water.
And so this is plastic that has been discarded. It's essentially rubbish, yes?
Yes, it's true, yes.
And the idea then of constructing some sort of island means that you'd have to stabilize what essentially are very small pieces and make somehow create a structure out of that.
At the moment, there are already very good examples on how you can recycle plastic and how you can actually construct, let's say, bridges out of them. So we've already seen them and they're already built. So this is not the main problem.
But how are you going to do that on site? I mean, fair enough if you've got bottles and plastics and you take them away and reprocess those. But plastics on site, how are you going to change their form?
Well, we're just going to actually put a recycling plant over there. I mean, you can put a recycling plant on board on a ship. It doesn't have to be that big. I mean, of course, it will take years for the island to be finished. But, I mean, yeah, let's just get started.
And so you'll suck up the plastic waste, you'll stick it through this some sort of portable recycling ship and then pop out the other end with what, great big sort of bricks, like Lego blocks that you'll then sort of glue together?
Yes, exactly, something like this. We want to make hollow elements, of course, because they have this floating capacity. And of course, we have to find the correct way to connect all these blocks together and to make it really a solid and a strong surface. Because, of course, you also have the winds and the waves over there, so it really has to be strong. But I think also this huge plastic waste, the amount of plastic waste, it also gives us the opportunity to build something in a certain dimension. I mean, at the moment, the dimension we were aiming for, it's about 10,000 square kilometers.
That would be so the total size of the island?
Yes, yes. I mean, and that's... we think this is really in reference to the huge amount of plastic waste which is over there.
So how many people would you see living on this island?
We made an estimate of 500,000.
Okay, so 500,000 people living on an island that's 10,000 kilometres, square kilometres, in the North Pacific. What's the climate like up there? I mean, is it going to be good weather if I go and buy myself a condo on this island?
Well, the island is in between Hawaii and San Francisco. And if you look at those two locations, yeah, they're beautiful.
Only problem is there are probably waves there as well. So will I get seasick at night?
Yeah, but I think if we are able to realize this dimension of the island, so the 10,000 square meter, you have a really strong and solid base. So it might swift a little bit or turn a little bit, but I think it's if you create something this dimension, it will be solid on the ocean. And of course, we have to make it strong enough to resist these strong waves. But this is something that we just have to take into the design process.
And so is this idea or the concept mainly driven from an environmental sort of ideology in terms of trying to clean up the oceans? Where are you going to get your money from?
Yeah, the concept is actually driven exactly from cleaning the oceans from the plastic pollution. I mean, at the moment, there are some examples on how or other proposals on how we can actually clean the ocean with the plastic. But all the concept, these are based on making new energy with the plastics and taking the plastic from the ocean and bringing them to shore, and then you get these really long transport lines. So I think the strength of our proposal is that we really want to recycle on the spot, so in the middle of the ocean. So then you avoid these long transport lines. So you start to recycle really where the biggest concentration of the plastic is. So this is already reducing the cost. And then you give new value to the plastic by creating new land. And if you look at the world and if you see what's happening all around, that more and more people have to leave the natural habitat because the climate is changing, then I think it's going to be a very valuable environment that we are creating there.
But is there a danger that this island would just consume products? It would be out there in the North Pacific. There'd be no arable land. There would be very little industry there. It would just essentially be like a great big holiday island floating around where, you know, everything had to be transported to the island.
Well, we want to make it as self-sufficient as possible. So we can use solar energy. There are new techniques where you can also get energy from the waves. And also we really want to create new land with plants and trees and everything. So it really should be a sustainable habitat.
Really? So you will actually have plants? I mean, the plastic blocks will actually, there'll be a sublayer and then you'll put sort of a soil over the top of that.
Yes. Of course, we start with the plastics, but also one of the big problems with the plastic is now is that it's breaking into smaller pieces because it's constantly under the influence of the sun. So if you put plastic for a very long time in the ocean water and you put the sun or the sunlight constantly on it, it breaks into these smaller pieces. So we have to cover it with something anyway. So and then for a big part, we want to use compost. So also the use of compost toilets. And with this, we want to create a new surface and also something which can contain plants and trees and everything.
I've got to say that the idea sounds quite balmy, almost crackers. And no doubt you've had people sort of say, what are you thinking? I mean, how realistic is something like this? Have you got anyone who's going to back it at this stage, put any money into the whole thing?
Yes. I'm getting a lot of interest from all over the world, actually. And of course, there are some people skeptical about the whole idea, and this is logic because something like this has never been done before. And of course, also the size I'm talking about, it's a huge island, of course. But on the other hand, I wouldn't know what else we could do about the plastics. I mean, all the other alternatives, they're really just costing money and it's all over the top and nobody's finding it attractive to start in cleaning up this ocean. So and I think by giving them also something new and something beautiful in return, so if you start to clean up the ocean, you get this beautiful island.
What about the geopolitics of this? Would it be its own state, or who would it be? American or?
Well, it's in international waters, So it could really be a new state, yes.
So time-wise, where do you go from here? Are you waiting for somebody like a developer to come and give you some cash? Or where do you think where's the money going to come for this?
No, we're certainly not waiting. We're applying for new funding. And we're talking with some recycling companies to support us with their techniques. And the thing we want to do next is to start to build a prototype, like a small version of the island, just to test these recycling techniques and also to see what we can actually do with the plastic waste which is out there. Because as I just told you, it's under the influence of the ocean water and the sun already for years. So we still have to test their strength, and then we have to see how we can make these huge puzzle blocks from which we're going to construct the island.
Ramon Knuster of WIM Architecture, and he's based in Rotterdam. There's a link right now on our website if you want to have a look at how these are going to look, because when you actually see them, there's some good visuals there that you can have a look at how this island might appear. Well, staying with rubbish in our oceans, Cara Lavender-Law from the Sea Education Association is the lead author of a 22-year study that has been analysing rubbish that ends up in the Atlantic Ocean. The results were released last week, and Cara, I guess the fact you've been collecting rubbish for 22 years, you must have a hell of a collection. What is it mainly? Is it just plastic bottles?
We actually found pieces of plastic that are very, very small, and in fact, so small that you really can't even see them from the deck of the ship. So what we do is we tow nets that are designed to collect microscopic plankton at the sea surface. And when we tow these nets for about a half hour, about 1 mile, we come up with very small pieces of plastic that are fragments from once larger items that perhaps were some of those consumer items that you just mentioned.
And is that typical of most guys, that it's in fact a slick almost of these smaller pieces?
Yes, actually that is correct. And there are misperceptions out there that there's some sort of floating island of garbage. But in fact, the vast majority of the plastic pieces that are out there are these very small fragments. You do see an occasional item that you recognize, like a crate or a jug or a bottle, but really what we're talking about are millions of pieces of these small fragments of plastic.
So how are they being transformed from these other forms like bottles and containers into these smaller pieces?
Yeah, that's a good question. We know that ultraviolet light, basically exposure to the sun's radiation, causes the plastics to become weaker, and then that combined with just being tossed about in the waves causes them to break down into very small pieces. Although we don't know what the ultimate fate of those pieces is in the ocean. We don't know if they break down to molecular size or if ultimately any kind of microbe is able to biodegrade them.
And this is really the crux of this research. You, for 22 years, have been studying a specific guy in the North Atlantic, and you've found that, in fact, it hasn't increased in size. That's your finding, isn't it?
We're focusing our work on the extent of this accumulation in north-south space, so in latitude between about Cuba and the state of Virginia. And what we found is that in that particular region, which is where we think the highest concentration of plastics is occurring, that the concentration has not changed over that 22-year period.
And did you find that surprising?
We did find that surprising, and really the question is how much plastic is going into the ocean or went into the ocean over that time period. And while nobody can directly measure that because the sources are very diverse and dispersed, we looked at the record of global plastic production worldwide, and that has increased significantly over that time period, as well as records of plastic disposal in the United States waste stream, which has also increased significantly. So we're inferring that more plastic has entered the ocean, and therefore it's surprising that we're not observing it floating in this accumulation zone.
So more plastic's going in, and yet when you measure the length of this guy from north to south, it hasn't increased in size. What's happening to all that additional plastic that's entering the oceans?
That's the big question. We have a number of hypotheses. One is that the pieces are ultimately breaking down into sizes that are too small for our net to capture. So essentially they pass through this mesh of the net, which is about a third of a millimeter in size. We know that different types of organisms do eat these plastic pieces, but we have no idea really of the entire suite of organisms that eat it or what happens to it after it's eaten. We also know that different types of bacteria and other invertebrates can grow on the plastic and potentially make it denser than seawater so that it sinks away from the surface, which is where we're doing our study. And also it's possible that some of this is washing ashore on beaches.
Has the type of plastics changed that you were able to chart that? I mean, the fact this has gone on for 22 years, that's a significant data set.
Yes, it is. And it's we have actually looked at a subset of the samples to try to determine the type of material, the type of plastic that we're collecting. And we found that the vast majority of samples are composed of polyethylenes and polypropylene, which are actually two plastic materials that float on the sea surface. And it's interesting because this does not include the type of plastic PET, which is what your common soda bottle or disposable water bottle is made of. And that material is actually denser than seawater. So presumably it's sinking before it ever reaches the middle of this ocean gyre.
Were you actually out on the boat harvesting the stuff?
I have been out, yes. Not for all 22 years, though, but I have been out to see in these regions, yeah.
And what is it? I mean, so when you're out there on the boat and you're in the gyre itself, what does it look like? Is it obvious that there's this plastic sort of layer on the top of the ocean there?
Yeah, that's a good question. If I were to put somebody who has not spent any time at sea out into the middle of this accumulation zone, they would probably be fairly unimpressed because these very, very small bits of plastic are not visible from the deck of the ship. However, having sailed in places outside of this region where plastic accumulates, in other parts of the ocean, there is no plastic. So if you sailed in those places and then you go to this accumulation zone, you are shocked to see the occasional bottle or crate or common household item float by. But really, for most people, if you put them out there, they wouldn't be very impressed because there is no big island or floating landfill.
But and do you move through varying concentrations of debris?
Yes, actually, it's very highly variable. So we typically tow a net twice a day, and that's about every 50 nautical miles or so, which is a relatively short distance given the size of the ocean. And you cannot predict from one day to the next, from what tow to one tow to the next, whether you're going to have a high number of plastic pieces or a low number of pieces. Although if you're in the accumulation zone itself, you can pretty well bet you're going to get something. You just don't know if you're going to get 20 pieces or 1,000.
So what do you make of Ramon's idea then, this idea of having this massive plastic recycler, this floating plastic recycler that would essentially vacuum this stuff up and punch out these sort of Lego blocks at the back end of the ship and these would be joined up and we'd essentially create a new country, this island resort?
You know, it would be great if we could make use of this plastic in some way, but I really do think it's not technologically feasible to clean it up. The fragments are so small that I think any method for trying to remove them is going to do as much damage to the ecosystem as leaving it there, because you're going to be vacuuming up all sorts of small microorganisms and phytoplankton and zooplankton that are essential to the food web in the ocean.
So really, you won't be investing or buying one of the early sort of condominiums?
No, but, you know, I'd be happy to visit one should it ever get built.
Cheers, Cara. Cara Lavender-Law, and she's the principal investigator and chief scientist of the Sea Education Association, which is SEA for short. Gotta love those acronyms. You're this way up here on Radio New Zealand National.